Welcome to the Orbital Sunrise podcast, sharing ideas that are catalysts for action to drive an inclusive and equitable world. Your hosts are
Elizabeth Harrison, ocean engineer, presenter, and engineering communicator and futurist.
And Ruth Harrison, aerospace engineer, space industry communicator, and diversity advocate.
This Orbital Sunrise podcast will educate and empower people by sharing the impacts of STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths. Our Series 1 key themes are unpacking the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 8, economic growth, humanising STEM, thought leadership and engineering futurist.
We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are broadcasting today, acknowledge their continuing connection to the land, air and sea and pay our respects to their elders past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today. If you would like to support our podcast, please share with your friends, leave a review, or check out our Patreon site.
Welcome to episode 4 of Orbital Sunrise podcast. I'm Elizabeth Harrison, and my co-host is Ruth Harrison, or Rocket Woman.
Hi. Today we welcome Cran Middlecoat. Hi, Cran.
Hi, everybody. How are we all going?
Cran has a lifelong obsession with all things aerospace. Being a pilot since the age of 16, his career has taken him from the flying clinic runs for the Royal Flying Doctor Service in Outback Australia to being a qualified on multiple commercial airline types, including the Boeing 787. Cran also holds an RPAS license, being one of the first in Australia to be granted chief pilot approval by the Civil Aviation Authority. Civil Aviation Safety Authority. Another keen interest shared jointly with his sons is rocketry. During Australia's first international model rocketry meet in 2015, Cran witnessed how engaging rocketry was for children of all ages and developed its rocket science adventures to promote the significant educational benefits that science of rocketry and flight could offer all school students across multiple subjects. Cran also regularly joins the Queensland Rocketry Society launches out at Seager Creek in Logan. Wonderful to have you here today, Cran. Where are you today?
I'm in the northern suburbs of sunny Brisbane. So, yeah, in Australia, best country in the world, best state in Australia. Yeah, nothing against the English there, Ruth.
Nothing at all, Cran. Thank you. So what are your pronouns, Cran?
Well, I love inspiring young people. Now, right back to kindergarten age, and we need to talk to young people and get them inspired. So we have curriculum-aligned workshops right from kindergarten age and beyond through to professional development, corporate team building. We cover the spectrum. So I firmly believe that getting young people excited about potential career options can't happen young enough, hence why we have our workshops going all the way from kindergarten age and beyond, even younger in some instances.
Thanks for your elevator pitch there, Cran. That's great. So companies are shaped by their people. So we're interested in exploring that in some detail. What inspired you to become a pilot in the first place?
I had no choice. I honestly had no choice. I never wanted to do anything else. The choice, I was born wanting to be a pilot. I mean, my father was a pilot. My grandfather was a pilot. As it turns out, both my boys want to fly. So it was a foregone conclusion. I never wanted to do anything else but fly aeroplanes. And so I can't ever remember a time in my life when that wasn't the case. So there was no decision. It was just, that was what was going to happen.
In the family.
So you'd say family, having those family ties to a career is quite important, being able to see it, you know, firsthand.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my parents used to go for social nights at the aero club down at Redcliffe when I was very young, and they used to leave me in my porta cot in the chief flying instructor's office. So I was around aeroplanes from a very, very young age. My father ran his own maintenance business. He was a qualified pilot, but his profession was a maintenance engineer. And so on Saturday mornings, he'd go down to the airfield and do catch-up work from the week, and I'd tag along behind him and sit in the aeroplane while they're doing engine runs and all sorts of things. And it's just, I wanted to be around aeroplanes as much as I could. So, and having that influence was great. My father was my first passenger when I got qualified at the age of, I was qualified for passengers at the age of 17. And he was my first passenger. My mother was my second. So having that influence was, what got me on the road to a career in aviation.
That's special, like really good to have those supporters there.
It is, and it's just manifests itself with both my children. My wife, her father was a pilot with ANSA. Her brother's a pilot with Qantas. Her other brother was an aircraft engineer. Her sister learned to fly as well. My wife was the only sensible one. She's a nurse. And so my boys have got a pretty thick bloodline of aeroplanes. And it is great because it gives them a focus from a very young age. The eldest one's learning to fly with the Air Force cadets now, and the youngest one's a state champion in model aircraft aerobatics. He's very good at that.
So you'd be quite, you've been quite lucky then in having all of those influences in your personal life. So how do we get those influences to young people who don't have that background or don't have those opportunities? And is that part of why you started into rocket science?
I almost think that is my why. Yeah. I started rocket science. Getting it to a younger age, because in terms of aerospace, it's a scary subject for a lot of people. It gets put in the too hard basket. People think that, you know, they look at an astronaut and think that that person is a superhuman. And they're not superhuman. They're regular human beings who are just extremely dedicated. And they think that it's just all too hard for them to even talk about. And it's not the case. And particularly with young people, you want to show them that they can achieve amazing things. And the younger you start talking about that, the better. So I think that is my why, is to get out this inspiration of the potential of following a passion for a career in aerospace at a very young age. And that's why, honestly, working with the younger primary school years are my favourite group. They're just little sponges. They just soak up everything. The one thing I like the most is they're not afraid to fail. They are prepared to give anything a go. They're not scared of a negative outcome. Something, as Carl Sagan said, something horrible happens between the first year and the last year of high school when these young people stop being inquisitive. And I see that. I see that even in 2022, I've got to work so much harder to get high school kids engaged. And once they do, the learning is just the same as would be with a primary school child, except they're scared of being judged. They're scared of failing. And as a result, they're scared to progress. And so that's why I think there is some fundamental flaws in our education system to get young people excited about learning again.
Yeah, I think that, like what you say there around the fear of failure, like that's come up in a couple of our other podcast episodes, and you know, young primary school, you know, aren't afraid to that because, you know, they're like learning, experiencing, and being able to keep that atmosphere to follow that is good. And it's great that you've you know, following your passions, and if people work to that, they just keep on doing it. Like anyone can do it. Like, you don't have to be anything in special with that. So that brings me to the next question around what has been one unexpected finding you have embarked on during your career or has come up, and how has it shaped you now?
Oh, well, unexpected. Yeah, where do I start? The one challenge you have as an airline pilot is finding a means of employment for your spouse that doesn't have a major detrimental impact on your relationship. Because the only thing regular about an airline pilot's roster is it comes out once a month, and that's about it. You don't know where you're going to be. On Thursday week, you're not like you're going to be at the office and you can finish off early to pick the kids up. You don't know where you're going to be. And so my wife and I were actually looking at a business to start. We knew it had to be something we'd be doing ourselves. And we were struggling. We looked at possible franchise options and everything like that. And then as it said in my bio, I was invited by a friend of mine to go to the first Australian International Rocketry Meet out near Goondiwindi in 2015. And I saw a little one teacher school with her handful of kids. And that was the light bulb moment. That was it. I thought, right, I've got to be able to take this to them. That was the embryonic moment of our business, being able to, because these kids were captivated. They loved it. They were outside and they were learning. There was a little girl who had two cardboard tubes from the paper towels taped together like binoculars. And she was out there. They were engaged. And I thought, that was it. I thought, I've got to be able to take this to them. And so that's when we started doing our investigation, speaking to teachers, seeing whether it's a workable option. We very soon discovered that children, pyrotechnics, and public liability insurance don't mix very well. So the original idea of actually launching, getting the kids to build and fly the chemical rockets, which we saw out at Goondiwindi, turned to a no-go. And then I remembered something back to an experiment I did as a child myself with water-propelled rockets. And that morphed into another discovery that, hang on a minute, these kids have everything they need to build a rocket in the recycling bin. It's a soft drink bottle. And initially we gave, and we still do for the high school, it's gone to a high school program now, where we send a video to the teachers. The kids have to source a soft drink bottle, actually two of them, some cardboard and a tennis ball to get the weight right. And they build a rocket and then we come to school and launch it. And that sort of thought, well, that's really cool because these kids can do it with a skill set they already possess. They don't need anything special. All I need is a roll of tape. That's the only thing they had to source. Oh, that and a Sharpie pen. That's the only thing they had to source. Everything else was in the recycling bin. And so that was a pretty cool discovery that we found that along the way because of an insurance issue. We couldn't take explosives, which technically the little rocket motors you use to fire model rockets, which we do with Queensland Rocketry, are a classification of explosives. And explosives on school grounds are not an ideal mix either. So that's how we've morphed now. We're doing air and water propelled rockets with a big emphasis on sustainability and reuse, repurposing. And it's working out pretty well.
Yeah, that's a great mention of, you know, where you're actually demonstrating, you know, space and rockets and what's involved there, but you're bringing in sustainability and just everyday items and also showing that, being an ocean engineer and hydrodynamics and the power of water, like that has a tremendous potential in energy and power. And you're, you know, demonstrating that in, you know, in the lens of space and rockets. So that's really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it absolutely is.
So, do you feel that STEM is part of everyone's lives and that it is important that everyone should have an awareness of how it impacts them?
We all walk around with these things, mobile phones in our pockets. Everyone has one of those. If it wasn't for someone with a creative imagination to think, wouldn't it be great if we had a phone that would be mobile that could fit into our pockets? If it wasn't for their STEM enthusiasm, we wouldn't have that. So absolutely, STEM impacts everybody every day. That's where it like rocketry and science and space impact every day. We all use Google Maps. They talk to satellites, geostationary satellites, hundreds of kilometers above us. They got there because of rockets. There's no other way to get them there. So that is STEM, which we absolutely, or virtually everyone benefits from every single day across the globe. And yes, it is a globe. It's not flat. I can assure you it is a globe. It is definitely not flat. I've flown over a good portion of it and I've never seen the edge.
What do you think are some of our biggest challenges that STEM can possibly solve for us?
Well, I think the biggest challenge we have is embracing STEM in schools for a start. I don't have that many friends in the Department of Education. Frankly, our education system's archaic. It was devised back in the days of during the Middle Ages where children, you had to know how to problem solve to stay alive. And there was one day a week, it was Sunday school. And it wasn't a religious connection. It was the one day children had available because a lot of them were actually working. And they went to school on Sundays to learn. And even though the technology's changed in terms of we've got smart devices now as opposed to textbooks, we really haven't changed what it is we're learning. So one of the biggest challenges we have is to really modernise our education system, to embrace education, get young people happy and engaged while they're learning. For the love of peace, why are we still educating how to work compound fractions? I mean, 9 and 11 sixteenths multiplied by 4 and 3 eighths. Why? Is there is not a single real world application for it. The only profession that needs to know how to do that are teachers because they've got to teach it. No one else uses it. Decimals, absolutely. I mean, I've eaten my words on everything. When I was a young person, writing reports, this is garbage. I'm going to be a pilot. I don't need how to write a report. Boy, I was off the mark with that one. Learning Japanese, this is garbage. I'm going to be a pilot. I started flying aeroplanes to Japan, didn't I? And you know, I've eaten my words on everything except compound fractions. That is my little bugbear. Why are we educating something that is so superfluous and so redundant? It doesn't work. There's no use for it anymore. Yet we still waste so much time across the middle to upper primary school and the lower high school years on something which is so useless. And that's just one example. So we really need to modernise our education system and get kids excited about learning. Embrace project-based learning. Some of you may have noticed it was a little while ago now, I made a post on LinkedIn. Here's all these students they weren't in school uniform it was actually my old high school, incidentally. And I thought, it must be free dress day. It wasn't free dress day. These kids had come to school to do schoolwork on the school holidays. They were building an aeroplane. They're building a full-size aircraft at Mueller College. It was project-based learning, which was, it was part of their assessment. And these kids, and I'm not talking one or two, the class was there. They'd all come to school. The vast majority had come to school on school holidays to do schoolwork. But that schoolwork was building a full-size aeroplane. If that doesn't scream out the benefits of project-based learning, I don't know what will.
Yeah. And
so that's where I see we have to modernise how we're teaching and how we're teaching and instructing young people.
Yeah, the modernising bit, it definitely brings out, you know, you got theory and first principles. And I think I'm a believer in actually going back to first principles with technology. But you have to link all that theory with real life applications and the trend.
Absolutely.
And get to that. So that brings on to, how does Rocket Science Ventures help you to achieve your personal goals?
Well, my absolute why, like I said earlier, is to get young people inspired. And my personal goal is in years to come, I would like to get LinkedIn messages or emails from young people saying, Cran, I've done it. I've just got my job with Northrop Grumman or with Boeing, or I'm starting my apprenticeship with Qantas. I'm going to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. And it was because you inspired me. That's why I do this. You have to have something bigger than the bank account for your reason to do what you do. And this is why I probably don't mesh with a lot of business people, because I prioritize making a difference before I prioritize the bank account. And hence why I certainly do a lot of things for free. Like last night I was after hours doing a Zoom conference on the Read for Peace with Anisha and Gavin McCormick. Reading story time for 12 hours straight to kids all over the world. It's about making a difference. And that's how I achieve my goals, is by being that person, that point of difference, the standout for a young person's education. And rockets are captivating. They engage young people and they achieve a spectacular result, like I say, with a skill set they already possess. And to see something, that rocket, which they assembled themselves, fly 40, 50, 60 meters skyward, it engages them. And then when they're engaged, they absorb the content. And that's my why. I get young people excited while they're learning and enjoying their learning.
Yeah, that's great. So going from rockets, I'm going to take you back to your airline pilot. Can you share an experience or what it's like? Because you're a certified pilot to fly the 787 Dreamliners.
That's right.
So have you got something there with experience of flying that? What was that like? Because I know there's a raft of, they've had a lot of production problems, and but there's a lot of technology in that.
Well, the part I just love being in aeroplanes. I love flying. That's why I did it. Above and beyond anything is to the fact you just got to love what you do. And flying aeroplanes is what I love doing. There's things that stand out. Like, for instance, I came into land at Honolulu one morning, and right across the estuary that goes up to Pearl Harbor, and there's a US submarine right underneath us. That was cool. I landed at Bali at 6 minutes to midnight on New Year's Eve. We were hundreds of miles out. I could see fireworks and strobe lights. The whole island was going berserk. We landed and cleared the runway, and the fireworks were so close to the airport, we could hear the bangs with the engines running in the aeroplane.
Wow.
Never happened in Australia. Mind you, you'd never see a family of four in a scooter in Australia either, but when in Rome, as they say. And it's like... then seeing Mount Fuji at sunset when you're coming into approach and into Tokyo, things like that. But they're the parts I loved of my job. But one of the things I used to really, really enjoy, which links to my why now with rocket science, is when we brought young people to the flight deck. And I used to really enjoy it because you could see parents would bring their little people in, and they almost had this look of sheer panic on their faces. Don't touch, don't touch, don't touch anything. And I used to find all the things they could touch. And I'd put them in the seat. I'd get the radio headset. I'd make them, they could wear the radio headset. And the 78 was cool. It had this little trackpad like you have on your laptop. And then we could move this cursor around all the screens on the aeroplane. And I'd show them where to move it. And we had a printer built into the console. And I'd get the kids to print out a load and trim sheet. And so out comes this piece of paper out of the console, and I'd give it to them as a souvenir. There you go. There's your first load and trim sheet. And I used to really love that. And then that sort of like then rings true with rocket science, because that was before I started this business. But I used to love getting kids excited about flying and bringing them up to the flight deck. I remember there was a young man, I landed in Tokyo, and... Captain was a grumpy old bloke. He shot through. And anyway, I just let him go. But there's this young man in his early 20s. He was learning to fly. And he asked if he'd come to the flight deck. Sure, come on up. He sat in the FO seat and ground power cock connected. So I told him which buttons to switch to flick over the ground power from the onboard power. And he hit two switches, but he was over the moon. he'd actually action something on a Boeing 787, which, you know, it would be years before he could do that. All he did was press two switches. And so it all comes down to my why is inspiring young people, or inspiring anyone really, to look at the possibilities. And you are capable. You can achieve amazing things. And just because we're pilots doesn't mean we're superhuman by any means. And I'm just this crazy whack job guy who loves flying aeroplanes and loves sharing it.
Bringing the human into pilots.
Absolutely. Trust me, we're human. I can assure you of that.
Yeah. I think we've got another question which links into that around what do you see as the future of the airline industry, and how can it continue to grow sustainably, and what does that mean for future pilots?
That really is an interesting one to ponder, because without a shadow of a doubt, the technology for pilotless aircraft exists. It's absolutely here. There's no doubt about it. I think it'll be a while before we see it really embraced, because there's going to be a psychological issue for passenger carrying aircraft, for people to get on board an aeroplane knowing that there's no one up the front. Because, you know, I don't, people say, oh, it must be so stressful being a pilot with all those people you're responsible for. I thought, no, it's not. I'm saving my own neck. You know, I want to get home to my family too. So if I'm looking after myself, you've got to be okay. There's no stress like that. And being on an aircraft where that's removed, I think we'll it's going to be very challenging from, like I say, a psychological perspective to get people to accept that. So I certainly think in the short to medium term, there will be jobs for airline pilots. Freight carrying aircraft, there's potential for, like, freight doesn't care if it crashes and burns remotely. So that may be an option. However, the downside with that is freight aircraft are usually surplus older passenger carrying aircraft, which require pilots to fly them. So I think definitely think, again, from the short to medium term, there'll be jobs for pilots flying freighters. Long term, it's anyone's guess. And I think that's going to have to almost be a cultural acceptance thing of accepting automation, like driverless cars. I think they'll be accepted much sooner or much quicker than pilotless aircraft, because the vast majority of people know they can grab a steering wheel and do something if they need to. So it's an interesting one to think. Long term, there may not be a job for pilots, but heck, they could say that for surgeons too. You know, artificial intelligence is becoming incredibly, incredibly good. I saw recently a talk about artificial intelligence lawyer. Well, artificial intelligence versus a lawyer. They were both given the same variables and they both came out with the same outcome, except the AI did it in less than a minute or some ridiculously short period of time, whereas it took the human lawyer hours. So I wouldn't want to be a lawyer, put it that way. I think AI could take that one over very, very quickly. And same with doctors and surgeons. Essentially, AI could take over those jobs. Certainly, the diagnostic side of things much sooner. So it's an interesting one to ponder. But definitely, in the short to medium term, there'll be jobs for pilots and engineers. But it's going to be a big paradigm shift to have pilotless aircraft and people who are prepared to put their, you know, essentially putting their life into an aircraft which does not have anyone sitting up the front. I still think that's a ways off.
Yeah, there's big questions on that socio-technical, where that actually ends up lying. And I know, like, there's a tube line in London that is all unmanned powered, so it doesn't have a driver. But it does have someone sitting in, you know, the front of the control at night times.
Okay.
So particularly because of, you know, if they've been to the pub and they're a bit drunk late at night, but that's fairly well accepted on that. But it is definitely where you're taking away jobs and things. What are people to do? And which is not really a technical question.
So you think of the jobs it's going to create. I mean, a young person who started school this year, the job which he or she may have, it's probably not even been invented. And that's the exciting part. It's an exciting time to be alive, because things are changing that quickly. We're going to see amazing, amazing advances in technology. And they'll be doing things which we can't even fathom now. But in, you know, 2042, it's when those young people are just starting out their careers or early part of their careers, we can't imagine what it's going to be like now. Like, what do we possibly have between Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, all of that? What else do we need? I can't think of it. What's the next big Facebook? I'd love to know, because there will be something for sure. What it's going to be, I've got no idea though. And more than likely be one of these young people in school right now who will come up with it.
Yeah, the growing skills, the new skills, the reskilling to other things.
Yep, that's it.
So what do you think of when you think of how your role is in education intersects with your civil experience, your commercial experience, but also within space and then defence and then, you know, all of the technology that's coming in from all of these different angles now? Are we on the right track? Are we going in the right direction? Is there things we could be doing better?
Well, I'll come back to the education. The education to embrace those things could certainly be done better. I am very, very glad to see that Australia now is embracing the aerospace industry. I mean, for decades, it was a stagnant industry. And the really sad thing about that is that we were world leaders in drone technology in the 1950s. The drone pilotless aircraft called the Jindavik, which is Aboriginal for the hunted one, it was a drone developed in Melbourne at Fisherman's Bend by the government aircraft factory. We were the seventh nation to have our own satellite in orbit around the Earth. The flight data recorder was an Australian invention. The navigation aid, the distance measuring equipment, or DME as we call it, that was an Australian invention. Yet all of those innovations and a lot of the people who contributed to them, there was no business for them in Australia. So they either retired with not achieving amazing things, or they went overseas and took their talents there. And overseas companies capitalised on that, those Australian innovations. So we are seeing that starting to come back now with the Australian Space Agency, which is really, really great. And we just need to embrace it more. Embrace civilian talent as well. Like the team at Black Sky Aerospace, I'm very close to those. Those guys are really doing fantastic work. They are taking incremental steps. They're doing smaller rockets, building up to the larger vehicles. And they have a talent, and they've got young people on their team doing that. That's really good. Fleet Space down in down south with Flovia, they're doing some amazing stuff too. The guys at Valiant Space with liquid fuel propulsion, they're really making some good headway as well. So there are some really good progress we're seeing with the civilian market at the moment. I would like to see the government supporting that more and not being not just giving the money to the guys who are making the most amount of noise, but looking at the genuine capabilities, because they're the ones which will take Australia to the next level. Getting in at the younger age, and that's where I'm so passionate about seeing education reform, to show young people from a much younger age they can achieve amazing things.
Yeah, thanks for highlighting, you know, like good policy, leadership, and Australia's very risk-averse.
They are, very much.
That does not help the science research, you know, continue along the pathway.
That's right.
It just gets sent elsewhere.
Exactly.
And there's some really good stuff. Like there's a lot of space and aerospace development that has been done in Australia that you've just mentioned that. Mm-hmm.
I want to take you now, you've always been quite open about your personal medical battles and how that's impacted your life. And what have you taken away from that? And how do you feel now looking back on how that's changed what you've been doing and impacted your career choices as well as your personal life?
It's been an interesting journey. We began rocket science before my health issues started. And it was meant to be a little part-time thing that my wife was going to manage from home and I was going to do on my days off just to get a little bit more part-time income. Like I said, it was the option which your spouse could have as to develop some income without having a massive impact on our family life. And it was in 2015, I was in Tokyo and I just had my morning coffee and I walked out of the coffee shop back to head towards the hotel where we were staying. And it's like, I just felt this massive hit of fatigue. And I thought, heck, if I don't sit down, I'm going to fall down. And thankfully that time I was crewed with a very good cabin crew. And I talked to my flight attendant and she said, I think you better go to the doctor. Anyway, so I did. And they thought, oh yeah, it's did some blood tests. Oh, okay, you've got glandular fever. Take 6 weeks off. You'll be right. Back to work. Okay, fair enough. 9 months later, I was no better. And then a very long story short, that's when they discovered an arachnoid cystic lesion was growing right between the hemispheres of my brain. And in sort of the deepest, darkest parts of the brain that surgeons don't want to go to unless they absolutely have to. And they said, look, we'll watch it for 12 months. It won't grow. And then we'll give you a letter to CASA and away you go. Anyway, it did grow. It grew about a millimeter. And they said, oh, look, it might have, it might not have. So 12 months later, it definitely had grown another 2 millimeters. Oh, heck, we better start doing scans every 6 months. And from the mid 2019 to the end of 2019, it grew from 11 to 22 millimeters across. It doubled in size.
Wow.
And surgeon says, sorry, mate, we're going in. That's going to get nasty. And it was an incidental find. It was discovered by accident because they did a scan, not expecting to find anything, and they did. And that culminated in neurosurgery on the 6th of January, 2020, just before the pandemic hit, thankfully, because I wouldn't have been able to get it done after. And that was tough because I suffered a seizure following it, and it has left me with what appeared to be permanent brain damage now, which will more than likely inhibit me from holding a pilot's medical, which is a very tough pill to swallow. I'm sure you've gathered from how I've spoken, how passionate I am about flying. All my life, it's all I've wanted to do. And it would appear there's a very, very slim chance that I'll be able to get back to it. Then there's days when I think, God, karma, the universe, whatever you think of it in your language, what's all this trying to tell me? And I think maybe I'm actually in a position I'm meant to be. I'm a better value to the industry I'm so passionate about by not being in the cockpit and being around encouraging young people. Like I was a nerd at school. No one took me seriously, not even teachers. But I was so driven. That's all I wanted. All I talked about. If I had to write a story, it was always about an aeroplane of some description. So I had that passion there. And so I see young people now who have that passion, but there is someone who's listening. There is someone who's taking them seriously. And I went to a little school here in Brisbane at Norman Park, and there's this group of, I think there's four or five boys. They call themselves the Aviation Geeks. They've got their own aviation club. And the principal's really good. She really encouraged it. And it was the best day at work. These boys and I just completely nerded out aviation. We had this complete nerd session. It was so good. I ended up taking them because I can fly ultralight aircraft now, little two-seat aircraft. I took them all flying. But if I hadn't have had that seizure and if I was back flying, it would be more than likely those boys never would have got that influence. So yeah. I'm wondering now, have I been, you know, whatever higher order you believe in, am I here for another reason? Is that to make sure our industry's got young people to take up the baton in the years to come? And maybe that's my calling. So that's how I live with it now.
That's a great mission. And it must be hard when you're so passionate to do something and then something happens through no fault of your own where you just can't do that anymore. Like, that's tough to deal with. But it's great to hear, you know, coming through and going, okay, how can I still be involved?
Very tough. There's days when I'm a mess where pre-COVID I was down in Sydney and working at an outside school I was care doing rocket launches down there. I was right underneath the final approach path for runway 16 right in Sydney. The airplanes were so low I could read the registrations, and I knew those airplanes, some of them flew over. I've flown that very airplane. That airplane's in my logbook. That was a hard day. That was a really, really hard day. And, you know, that's when you just got to find, you've got to find a different why. I could crawl up in a ball and, you know, watch Netflix all day and be a couch potato if I wanted to. You've got to find a why. You've got to have a purpose. And maybe my purpose now is to, like I say, inspire the next generation of aerospace professionals.
That's great. Your remission of inspiring the next generation. So in inspiring the next generation of aerospace and pilot professionals, what advice would you give someone looking to join the aviation or space industry?
Fail. Fail quickly. Don't be afraid to fail. The more you fail, the earlier you fail, the more you'll learn and the more you'll progress. You'll progress. Embrace failure. It's okay to fail. Put your best foot forward, put your best effort in, and if you fail, embrace it and take the learning opportunity. I say fail is, it's not a word, it's an acronym. And I don't know who said this, but it rings true with me. It FAIL stands for first attempt in learning, F-A-I-L, first attempt in learning. Embrace failure. Don't ever, ever try to be perfect, because you'll never achieve perfection. Perfection actually doesn't exist. What you'll do is you'll get better, but you'll keep getting more and more critical of yourself, and that's not healthy. So aim for progress, not perfection. Don't be afraid to fail, and never, ever say practice makes perfect. I say practice creates confidence.
Yeah.
That way you'll be confident with your negative outcomes and confident with the learning you'll get from them. So don't be afraid to fail. Never aim for perfection, and practice creates confidence.
That's a great acronym. And yeah, I really love it. Progress, actions, and like what you're saying there about reiterating.
Mm-hmm.
Constant refinement.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard, but embrace it.
How would you advise somebody to find their why? We get told quite a lot, you know, find your why, you know, you need to, but it's not that easy. It's not something you can, you know, just pick up and, you know, go, there it is, I've found it. It can be quite an effort. What would you advise would you to give someone to help them find their why?
I was very fortunate because my why has been, it always had something to do with anything that flies. So I had that there. Find something you really enjoy, and it doesn't really matter what, and give back. You could be a fantastic at long jump or high jump, and have that, and find your why by showing someone else how to achieve what you achieved. You know, each one you learn, teach one that you've learned. Bring someone up, and you might find that high jump mightn't be your why. But along the road, you likely find that. If it's something you love, help someone else to achieve what you love, I think would be the best way to find your why. And like I say, some people might have loved something. Like I used to really enjoy golf. I did my back in on an overnight when I was playing golf in Perth. And I haven't played golf since. So I don't think golf was ever my why, but you know, I've moved on from that. And it doesn't matter if you move on from what it was, but you know, pull someone else up, help them. If you've really achieved something, and it doesn't really matter what, turn around and help someone to get where you are. I think that would be a good way to maybe discover your why along the way, even if the thing you're doing might not be your why. Help someone else to achieve it, and you'll discover your why along the way.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think my personal journey has taken me in many different directions, and it's not until you get a little bit older you realise how they overlap in your experiences and how things can impact what you're doing or why you're doing it, but they may not seem to have that connection when you start it or when you do it. So yeah, I think that's great. Just give something a go, I think, is the, you know, have a go at things and see whether you like them, and if they stick, they stick, and if they don't, you know, move on and try something else. But bringing other people with you is, you know, for me, that's really important as well.
If you make a comment which rings with me there, Ruth, that I found some photos of me when I was 20, because I know I was working this particular, I was working a real estate agent. Frantically working full-time by day, delivering pizzas at night to save money to learn to fly. I don't know how it happened, but I was the one, LJ Hooker I was working for had this mascot, this big bear, and they had these bear suits which would go out to the franchises and you could use them. How I ever drew the short straw to wear this bear suit, I don't know. But I don't know how many times I did it. I had to wear the bear suit. And one of the agents wanted to have some community connection. So I went to a kindergarten dressed up as this big LJ Hooker bear, and all the kids had their teddies there as well. And I look back on it now and I thought, hang on, I had a connection with kids when I was 20. I never thought I'd ever own a business working with children, but I look back on it now and I thought, hang on a minute, I must have had something there because I actually enjoyed working with these kids, you know, two decades before, or, you know, maybe not quite that long, a decade and a half before I started a business working with children. So it's funny, like you say, you look back on those things and how they overlap. That job was just to get money to learn to fly, but look how it overlapped with experience working with children.
Yeah, that's really interesting when you go back and you see where intersections go. I had one when I moved from London to Galway. And, you know, it was in development of energy and resource projects, and then I was going into the exploration side of things. And, you know, it was two different industries and kind of cross-pollinations of that, changes in, you know, countries. And, yes, it's interesting with that intersect of what's common and what's different. And it's not necessarily what I thought was the case.
Oh, yeah. That's a funny old world we live in.
Yeah, it is. But yeah.
And I think that's what's really exciting for young people is I think we're moving away from this expectations of you having these careers for life, and that there is opportunities there to use these cross skills, to use these transferable skills in different ways. And that's something I don't think we had before. It was like, here's your career when you're 18 and this is what you're going to do. And then, you know, life doesn't work like that. And I think we're finally starting to appreciate that and appreciate the life skills and that things do have an experience, has an impact on the decisions that you make. And it's important.
Absolutely.
So what are you reading at the moment, Cran? What books have had an impact on the way you think or your outlook?
Well, this will tell you how much of a nerd I am. I'm actually reading Chris Hadfield's book. It's titled... something like along the lines of the everyday life on Earth from the perspective of an astronaut. And so it's all his experiences going through as a military test pilot through the Canadian Space Agency, ultimately getting a job with NASA, being a commander on the Space Agency, launching on the Russian Soyuz rocket, and looking back on those experiences and how he could relate to being real life. And again, he's just a human being. He's not superhuman. He's a really down-to-earth bloke. And he loves playing the guitar. Now, the difference is he just chose a career path to become an astronaut and to make sure he was prepared for that. I love reading those sort of biographies. That's something I read where you have the stories of those. Again, it's always got an aeroplane or a helicopter or a rocket or something. I don't read many Harry Potter books or that sort of fantasy, I must admit. It's all very, very much, if it doesn't have an aeroplane or a propeller or something like that, it doesn't really grab my attention. Unfortunately, my boys are becoming the same way, I'm discovering.
Love that nerd bit. Everyday people doing extraordinary things. I think that's something, you know, to take on there and can be inspiring for anyone.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To take on. So we've got a last question. So 42 is the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe and everything. What do we need to achieve it, Cran?
What do we need to achieve 42? I think it comes down to finding your passion and just sharing that passion and helping others achieve their passions. And then everything else will take care of itself. I remember getting an email from a young person and they wanted to become an airline pilot because the pay was good. Yeah, sure, the pay is pretty good, but that's not the right reason. You do it because you love flying. Because, yeah, while the pay is pretty good, you sacrifice a lot. Like, you're away on Father's Day. You miss birthdays. I miss my one of my best friend's engagement party because I was flying. So do something you love and then help someone achieve what they love. And I think the world will just be a better place. And I think the other thing that bugs me too is we're still seeing this massive gender biases in careers. Now, in 28 years I've been flying and nearly 9,000 hours of my logbook, I've only flown with 7 female captains. It's ridiculous, this gender, the gender imbalance we're seeing in aerospace in particular is absolutely ridiculous. It is getting better, but there is absolutely no reason why a young woman of 8 years of age can't aspire to be an aerospace engineer. And I've actually got some young people from Tingalpa, a school here in Brisbane, who were really, really engaged when I did their workshop recently. And they're coming out to the Queensland Rocketry launch in May. And I'm going to get them to meet the young men and women from Queensland University of Technology rocketry team and get them to meet these. And there's girls in that team as well. That's something I really want to see change, is this gender imbalance. And just because it's always been done that way, it's probably the worst reason why you should keep doing it that way. You know, just because traditionally pilots have been men, big deal. You know, there's no reason why young women can't be fighter pilots, airline pilots, instructors, ag pilots. There's no reason whatsoever. So I'd really like to see that change. We've never had an Australian woman astronaut. We've never had an Indigenous Australian astronaut. I think that's part of my life. I want to see both of those in my lifetime. I want to see Australia's first female astronaut and Australia's first Indigenous astronaut. And how cool would it be if it would be one of the young people that I inspire today becomes Australia's first woman astronaut or Australia's first Indigenous astronaut? That, I mean, could you possibly get any better than that? And it's all because I shared my why and helped someone else achieve their why. And if that's the question, the answer to the universe, find your why and help someone else achieve theirs, well, then I've done my job. And I'm going to keep doing it for a while yet.
I love that, Cran. You've almost brought a tear to my eye because I feel your passion so much. And, you know, that's the best answer, you know, just to help other people find their why, because it can be difficult. There's so many barriers to entry for so many different people that, you know, if we can help break down those barriers by helping them really understand what they're passionate about, then for me, that's, you know, that's fantastic.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to see more women airline pilots. I know I've got a school friend who, she flies with Jetstar, who's a pilot, which I'm like, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Probably not.
As well. And I love the challenge that you've thrown out in this podcast around who will the first Indigenous Australian and the first Australian woman astronaut be. I think it's a great challenge for this.
I keep telling my wife, go and buy a ticket with Virgin Galactic. I said, darling, imagine the public relations we'd have. Australia's first woman astronaut, and it's you. She's not keen. No, she's a member of the hot and cold running water flushing toilet club and sleep under the only sleep goes camping as long as there's only 5 stars.
So, that sounds definitely good. On that, I know I've got a friend and fellow engineer who works at ESA as a flight controller. And she's an engineer and she would probably love that too.
Know, we might have the first female Indigenous astronaut. Well, that would be fantastic.
Wouldn't it? Wouldn't that just be the absolute bee's knees? I'd love to see that. I really would. Yeah, and if it's... Who knows? Maybe she's listening to this podcast right now. You never know. I'd love that. Yeah, the three of us got emails in years to come saying, I remember your podcast and I'm heading to JPL to start my satellite degree or something like that. Yeah, that'd be so cool.
Never know where the next inspiration is coming.
No, you don't.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Cran. We've had a great chat. We've loved hearing about your story, and I hope everyone listening at home has really enjoyed the story as well. And if we can inspire just one person to maybe look at a career in STEM or look at a career in space, then, you know, that's what we're here for, to really help people to understand that there are jobs out there for them and people can do what they're passionate about, and there's some amazing differences they can make as well. In these opportunities. So thank you so much, Cran. We love what you're doing, and keep doing it.
I will. Don't worry about that. Not retiring anytime soon. And even when I do retire, I couldn't just like sit down and go fly fishing. I couldn't do that. When I'll be retiring, I'll still be doing it, I'm sure.
Just you to say you're going fly fishing. You couldn't just say normal fishing, could you?
No. Couldn't do that.
Yeah, thank you, Cran, and thank you, Ruth.
And thank you, Elizabeth. Have a great afternoon. And,
Fantastic. Thank you for having me.